Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavriyam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, 9:8:1-4. Arjuna inquired, My dear Lord, O Supreme Person, what is Brahman? What is the Self? What are fruit of activities? What is this material manifestation? And what are the demigods? Please explain this to me. Who is the Lord of sacrifice and how does he live in the body? O Madhusudana. And how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, The indestructible, transcendental living entity is called Brahman, and his eternal nature is called Aryatma, the Self. Action pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entity is called karma, a fruit of activities. O best of embodied beings, the physical nature, which is constantly changing, is called Adibhuta, material manifestation. The universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods, like those of the sun and moon, is called Adidaiva. And I am the Supreme Lord, represented as the Supersoul in the heart of every embodied being. I am called Adiyagya, the Lord of Sacrifice. Okay. So you want karma? Nobody knows. Okay. 3. What is karma? Page 23. Due to material consciousness and activities, the living entities take on various bodies. This process is called karma. Srila Prabhupada explains the technical meaning of karma as follows. In the process of sacrifice, the living entity makes specific sacrifices to obtain specific heavenly planets and consequently reaches them. When the merit of sacrifice is exhausted, the living entity descends to the earth in the form of rain, then takes on the form of grains. Then the grains are eaten by man and transferred into semen, which impregnates a woman. And thus the living entity once again attains the human form to perform sacrifice and so repeat the same cycle. In this way, the living entity perpetually comes and goes on the material path. The Krishna-conscious person, however, avoids such sacrifices. He takes directly to Krishna consciousness and thereby prepares himself to return to Godhead. Right? So there's activities that are specifically done to elevate oneself to the heavenly planets or to get some material benefits. So that's what the devotee avoids, because those are then kamyaka. Means they're sacrifices that are done with a particular desire in mind. So those are avoided. But those then which are connected with his duty, right? As a human being, there's certain things he's supposed to do. That then he does. And he does that in connection with the Lord. Right? So that's what makes the devotion. So devotional service means that the devotional activity is the essential element, but what one's using for that is the, the proper activities. What are one's duties? What is one's, what are one supposed to perform? So it's not that anything that gives a result is given up. Because if you did that, that means everything would have to be given up. Right? You scratch your head, you get rid of the itch. So that would be classified as karma. You know what I'm saying? So one has to understand is that this idea of giving up work, that's coming from the Mayavad concept. That the impersonal concept is that spiritual means giving up all work. Right? Therefore, there's always the problem. Oh, you know, being engaged in things in household life, all these different things. So these things are a problem. Right? So one would think, okay, they're all given up. But not from the element that... it's not coming from the aspect of you're engaging yourself in Krishna's service. It's a matter of these things aren't spiritual, so you give them up. Right? But then that would have to define that giving up material means spiritual. Right? And much of the time it's taken that way. Somebody, you know, sacrifices for a higher cause and that. It'll be taken as, you know, as a spiritual expression. You know, just as you go out into nature, it's very nice, it's very beautiful. You know, so I had a spiritual experience. No, your mind wasn't so crazy, that's all, like it is in the city. So it's just, we found that moment of not being crazy, so that was spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So, one has to see that one is not distracted, that the reason that one is rejecting something for use in Krishna's service is not because of its difficulty that is there or the engagement of the senses. It has to be that there's no need for it in your performance of duty. Right? Just like if you're hungry, you eat. If you're not hungry, you don't eat. Right, so now if I say, you know, if you're already full, if you eat, then you get indigestion, you know, so many diseases come, this, that, so what will be the conclusion? You shouldn't eat, right? So then they'll be, so no eating, eating is Maya. No, it just means if you're already full, then you don't eat. So in other words, for those who do not need to be involved in family life and all these activities, then for them, why would they? So that would be a waste of time, right? The purpose of the household life is to engage the senses in Krishna's service, and in this way remove the need for that engagement. Because the point is supposed to be Krishna, right? It's that we're doing things because of Krishna. So if one is distracted by all these other needs, then engage in them, but connect them to Krishna. So then the purpose comes is that Krishna is what's important, not all these other elements. So if the environment's favorable, one continues in that line. If it's not favorable, one then leaves that line. Does that make sense? That's purpose. So if someone already has that understanding, why get involved? Right? That's the point. So one knows that detaching oneself from material endeavor, then that's always favorable because we're trying to attach ourselves to spiritual endeavor. Right? But that spiritual endeavor should be that Krishna is the prominent element. Krishna is why we're doing it. Right? So in the beginning, we may be doing these activities that would be done for Krishna, but because we're interested in them. Rather than we want to please Krishna, and these are ways we'd like to do that. You understand? It's just a change in the perspective. His perspective makes the whole difference. Right? You know, just like those who are politically correct, they'll say, perspective is everything. It's true. But the point is where does the perspective start from? It's from Krishna. And from the devotees. So the perspective that's starting from the materialistic mind is not a perspective to even be considered as a foundational perspective. So yes, perspective is everything, but it's Krishna's perspective that's important. How does Krishna perceive these things? Otherwise, that perspective on its own, what's the value?
It's relative.
That's the problem.
And, you know, relatives are always a problem, right? So, you know, so one has to be careful about these things, right? Right. Right. You're attached, but you get no benefit, right? You know, so that's the material world. You're attached, you get no benefit. Does that make sense? So the idea is that one has to see is that karma means when you're performing activities that are connected with one's conditioned nature according to your interests, but Krishna is not the goal, then it's karma. If Krishna is the goal, it's not karma, then it's karma yoga. Right? And if simply Krishna's pleasure is what you're trying to do, but you're engaging your activities, then that's bhakti yoga. Does that make sense? So, at some point, because the activities remain, right, then it's the same thing. It's just the perspective on it. The karma yogi, the bhakti yogi, they're the same. So karma yoga is bhakti yoga. But a distinction will be made here in this chapter simply because of the perspective, how you're looking at it. Before, as you're taking your activities, connecting them to Krishna. So it's karma yoga. It's devotional service. But then a higher form is Krishna's who's important. That's the important element, not as much your interests that are being connected. Right? And eventually Krishna will even say, even this, there's beyond that, where it's just Krishna. Right? And then the activities are just a natural expression of it. Does that make sense? So that will gradually build. But now, the first six chapters are how the body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. But you're starting from your nature, identifying your nature, and scientifically seeing that you're connecting it. But now we're talking about bringing out the more the element of Krishna as a person. So, is it for his pleasure? You know? It doesn't mean it changes anything. See, we're used to that it would change something. Why? If the karma yoga and bhakti yoga, there's a change. Why there must be a change in activity?
Because we take that material activities are material, therefore they're not spiritual.
Yes, that's the whole point. Because the idea is material activities cannot be spiritual or spiritualized. Means we'll say that, but ultimately then it's there. Otherwise, then, you know, let's say, you know, the men are sitting around, right? And then one of the guy's wife calls, right? And then, you know, depending upon the quality of that, their training, then if he's, you know, saying something, you know, like that, he'll be embarrassed to say, sorry about that. Yeah, I'll make sure I get that. And yeah, no, don't worry, you know, everything's fine. And all the other guys will be, yeah, look at this guy, you know, so attached, this and that. But the point is, what's the name? What's the field? Is there another way of dealing? Is there an alternative? No.
Peaceful?
No, but I'm just saying. If you want it to work, that's the only way to deal. So that would mean all the men would know, okay, his wife called, so he's got to talk like that. But generally, if you just have men, then they go, this guy, this, that. So either he won't talk, or he'll talk rough, or he'll get up and go somewhere else. Right? So what does that mean? You know, I'm not talking karmis here. So that means there's not an actual understanding of dealing with the field. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Is that it's not seen actually in connection. Because a nature is there, it has to be dealt with according to its nature. So that's called expertise. But because it has the element of attachment, everybody's attached to these things, and they want it, but at the same time as then they have to, you know, they want it, but they're the controller of it, so therefore they can't appreciate all these points. Does it make sense? Like that. So it's very important because we'll take, these things can't be connected to Krishna. They can, but it's not direct connection. It's indirect, but it's connected. But the point is, no, this can't be corrected, so it just has to be renounced, you know, this is that tough, rough. You know what I'm saying? You know, so the brahmacharis, they're being liberal and we just chant, we don't care for the rules. So they're very nice to the ladies, interactive and everything. But if they get married, then, oh, we're very renounced, we don't deal with the ladies, they're all Maya. You know what I'm saying? So how does this all work? You know, or the opposite. Right? You know, then the brahmacharis are all, Rafa, yeah, lady, don't talk with them, don't do anything nice, you know, this, or the grihasas are, oh, they're so nice with everybody and all this. And what's their duty? They have their wife. Why are they so nice to everybody else? You know what I'm saying? So there's a misunderstanding of how this applies. What's my duty so I can talk to anybody? You know what I'm saying? So this is the fun part. Okay. Four, what is Adibhuta? The changing physical nature is called Adibhuta, as it is explained by Srila Prabhupada. The physical nature is constantly changing. Material bodies generally pass through six stages. They are born, they grow, they remain for some duration. They produce some byproducts, they dwindle, and then they vanish. This physical nature is called Adibhuta. Right? So, what it is, the environment you're in, the body, the environment, everything that you're in, that is the Adibhuta. Right? The Adidaiva is going to be what controls that. Right? So what it is you can see, what you interact with, the field of activities, that's Adibhuta. Right? We're taking the soul as the individual who wants to act in that, they're Adiatma. Right? And the soul itself is Brahman, but how it will act, its nature is Adiatma, right? Because Adiatma means it will interact, it will try to, you know, Adiatma about deal with the body, with the mind, with the consciousness, right? That will go on. That's the nature, right? Because the body, the ego, that's your situation, that's the sat element. Right, your existence, that you exist, how you identify yourself, like that, how you see yourself. Right, so therefore, what situations you'll put yourself in. Right, chit, then what knowledge you have, what activities you perform, you know, that is connected with your identity, what results therefore you'll get. Right, and then the prayojana, that happiness, that means the, your, what do you call it, ananda, relationships, that interaction, what you'll gain from them. Right? So that is Adiatma. That the soul is Brahman. That's its nature. That's what it is. But then how it's going to act, that's Adiatma. Does that make sense? So that's why it's given, that's why Krishna is saying that. The indestructible transcendental living being is called Brahman. And his eternal nature is called Adiatma. You understand? It's like that. So then, that's the jiva, right? So then the field, whatever you see that you can interact with the senses, that's Adibhuta. Yes? Brahman is the situation. And then there's the nature of what you do with that. It means the soul is made out of Brahman. So what will that Brahman do? Does that make sense? Means, just like you say, okay, there's child, right? So that means he's small. He's not grown. He's not mature. That's the definition. But what do children do? You understand? Then that's on top of that. So it's the same thing, because one's based on the other, but there's a distinction between one's existence and one's you know, needs and activities. Brahman just means that he's eternal and unchanging. But the point is he's still a person. So therefore, he's going to act as Adiatma. You know, he's going to have his needs. He's going to, you know, in other words, he wants to interact with that field for a goal. Does that make sense? But he's eternal. That's the problem, is what you see here is Adibhuta is temporary. We're not obviously connected to Krishna. Right? Nadideva, you just see the demigods of Virat Purush and all this and that, so if you can see that, but that's what's going on. But if one's an illusion, one doesn't understand that. One identifies with the Adibhuta, one thinks, I am the Adibhuta, and there is no Adideva. Or one only sees the demigods, one doesn't see the Lord behind. Right? But in the spiritual platform, then you're the eternal soul. But you have a particular relation with Krishna. Therefore, you're in a particular situation. So that Adibhuta is the spiritual energy. Right? Does that make sense? And that Adidaiva, then that will be Krishna through his Yoga Maya.
Those who don't see Krishna, they will
be identified as the Adiatmas? They'll generally identify with the Adibhuta. Because they think they're the body, they think they're the surrounding. Does that make sense? Right? So, when you see Adiatma, you see what is the nature, that's why you're acting in the way you do. And then the nature is based on that you're Brahman. Right? So then you can actually start to see, and then the Adibhuta is a manifestation of the energies. And that's controlled by the Adidaiva. You know, by the Lord in his universal form, and the demigods are included in that. They're the arms. So they make it all happen. But it's actually on the control of the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So then you start to see properly. So the same definition defines it for what's happening with the karmas, but if you see it with this proper definition, you're able to be freed from karma. Right? If you don't see it properly, you're bound by it. You see it properly, you're freed from it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is that if one has the proper understanding and one acts according to that, you know, with the right attitude of devotion, then one is no longer on the material platform, even though the activities are the same. Because Maya is that which is not. You think it's not Krishna. That's the Maya. It's not the activity. It's that you don't see it connected to Krishna. You understand? Why is a pious activity considered good and an impious activity considered bad? By this definition. Do you understand? Right? So in other words, Krishna's authorized it. He is the scriptures. Like he has given this definition. That's why it's pious. And it's not according to Krishna's direction. That's why it's impious. So it's still its connection to Krishna. So you see that, that's good. Then it becomes transcendental. You don't see it, then it's still material. Better material. Like the smartest, they follow the scriptures because the scriptures say. But they have no idea of its connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of seeing from this perspective. You see this way, then it works. You don't see this way, it won't work. So that's what we're trying to say. Then you decide whether you change the environment you're in or change the activities or not. But the first point is to be able to see it properly. Right? That's what you're trying to do. Does that make sense? Okay. The physical nature is constantly changing. Material bodies generally pass through these six stages. This physical nature is called Adibhuta, right? So, in other words, the whole, what you see, the idea, but specifically, why the body is being pointed out, the physical nature, because that's how you perceive everything. We're the body, and this body being the most important, therefore everything else is in connection with the body. I'm in the environment for the benefit of myself, because I'm the body. So it's not that I'm separate from the body and this body is, you know, is also just part of the environment. My body is just part of the Adibhuta manifestation. And I'm separate from that. But as soon as I identify with it, then of the Adibhuta, my body becomes the most important. So that's the prominent element. But the situation is there also. So your body is just another element in the situation. You understand? But because we identify with it, it becomes the most important. You know, whatever we're doing, the whole world should stop. Right? Yes.
In that situation, does the body become, by conception, part of the Adhyatma?
Does the body become part of the Adhyatma?
In one sense, you could say, but at the same time, as it's more that the Adhyatma becomes the Adhyatma is where you see your unchanging nature. But then it's two kinds, right? Yeah, here's probably, I say that Adhyatma refers to the Swabhava. Swabhava is that substance which is intimately connected with the jiva. Okay, does that make the difference? In other words, there is his position as Brahman, then there's his nature. Does that make sense? So he's Brahman, that's the position of Brahman. His nature is going to be Swabhava. Yes, his body is Adibhuta. Right there. He refers to the impressions held in the subtle elements which accompany the jiva birth after birth, because the impressions are closely related to the Atma. Described as such in the Chandogya Upanishad, they are called Svabhava. This Svabhava is what I call Adhyatma, that which rules over Atma. So in this case, then, there's two kinds. There would be the Svabhava, which is the conditional, right? That's gained from these impressions. And then there's, which is coming from constitutional. So that's why he's saying the eternal position. Right? Because that same position will be there, is that you'll have that form, but that is your form. And then the Adibhuta becomes the environment. Right? But technically here is that body is just another manifestation because we're not connected with it. That's the problem. We think that we are the body, but we're not. In the spiritual world, the soul and the body are non-different. You know what I'm saying? So we're still, in one sense, thinking here. Means, in other words, we think here of everything except for who's the controller and enjoyer, as if we were in the spiritual world, because that's the nature of the soul. So the problem is we've defined that we're the controller and enjoyer rather than Krishna. But otherwise, the soul thinks everything's eternal and everything's full of happiness. Right? Because that's the two positions, right? You're Sambandha and your Prayojana. Right? Sambandha is eternal, it's Vaikuntha. And Prayojana, that is full of Ananda. So these are the two illusions that the living... When he thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer, he comes under the two illusions of the material world, Ananda Brahma and Vaikuntha Brahma. You think so like that. So then that's the difficulty. Right? So then he thinks everything. So you work everything. No one's having a problem with the five rasas and five senses and, you know, trees, you know, have the roots in the ground, the leaves in the air, birds fly, fish swim. No one has any problems with any of this. The problem is just who's God? Who's the controller? Who's the enjoyer? That's all. All the fights are over who's in control. Right? Who's supposed to enjoy this? That's all. If you check, that's all the stuff's over. There's not arguments over, you know, a rasa or something. You know, is parental rasa bona fide? You know, no, it's like that. Aren't we bored of five rasas? Can't we have a few more? You know, you understand? They're not. Even if you get into perverted kind of things, you know, like before it was like, you know, sexuality, there was male and female. Now I think there's something like, I forget how many, some ridiculous amount of definitions of all this. But it still will work as male-female. Like that. The mentalities that still will work in this way. So you can't get away from that. No one wants to. It's just they have their own ideas how to deal with it. Some want to deal with it piously, according to God's laws, and some don't. Does that make sense? So here you Svabhava, the impressions that are closely related to the Atma. Right? So that becomes the Adhyatma. So the impressions are devotional, then that's what defines his Svabhava. The impressions are material, that's what we'll define there. So samskars are to create the impressions that are pious and connected to the Lord.
Right? So they're for upliftment. That's the whole point of them. Is that okay? Okay. Then what is the Adidaya? Oh, the Lord is the governing principle of this material manifestation, as it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:30. What is the Adidaiva? The conception of the universal form of the Lord, which includes all the demigods and their different planets, is called Adidaiva. Adidaiva is further described in the Bhagavad Gita purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.19. What is the Adidaiva? The conception of the universal form of the Lord, which includes all demigods and their different the conception of that Virat Purush. What was it called? What it says that you had word dyslexia? This was paragraph dyslexia. No, it just connected the words here and the words in the next paragraph connected. So I just switched them.
And it made sense?
Yeah, it did. Until we just read that. Then it's like the conception of the Yurat Purush, or the gigantic form of the Supreme Lord, is said to include all the dominating demigods as well as the dominated living beings. Even the minutest part of a living being is controlled by the empowered agency of the Lord. Since the demigods are included in the gigantic form of the Lord, worship the Lord, whether in his gigantic material conception or in his eternal transcendental form as Lord Shri Krishna, also appeases the demigods and all the other parts and parcels, as much as watering the root of a tree distributes energy to all of the tree's other parts. Consequently, for a materialist also, worship the universal gigantic form of the Lord leads one to the right path. One need not risk being misled by approaching many demigods for fulfillment of different desires. The real entity is the Lord himself, and all others are imaginary, for everything is included in him only. So, you have the Lord as the universal form, so everything's included within him. Right? So that means all living entities, everything. So this is different from the Adibhuta, because the Adibhuta is the manifestation, what you see, of the gross elements. Right? Because Bhuta is the Mahabhutas. Right? So what you can see is there, but why is the tree like that? You say, that's okay, this is a tree. Why is it like that? It's not just because of that particular combination of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Is what's creating the tree. No, it's the Lord, the universal form is that. So all manifestations that can happen of a tree, that's all in the universal form. This simply happens to be the gross elements that are making it visible. Right? Just like we say, let's say you want to build a house, so you go to some contractor. And then he brings out, hundreds of plans of how you can make a house. Of different floor plans, different levels of houses, different materials, and all combinations of any of that. You want in your living room, you want one brick wall and the other's wooden walls, and you want this, he can do all that. You can only do what's already available. You can't do something that's not. Right? You decide, let's do something, special. We've had people with, have walls and the ceiling opens. Why don't we have one where the floor opens? That would be really unique. No one has that, right? Like that. Well, there is one in Malbork, in Poland. There is one. In the castle there. There's a bunch of, what do you call it, the Crusader knights, and they settled there from Germany. They're, all monks, so it was their monastery, but it was also a castle like that. They had a room like that. It was the bathroom like that. It was on the top floor, right? And this is a very high castle. So this bathroom was reserved for enemies. So when they would use the bathroom, then they would pull a switch and the floor would open and then they would disappear like that. So you do have rooms like that, but we understand the principle is that you can only do what's there. So that means the universal form includes everything. Then there's the manifestation of that. In other words, the primary creation includes everything. So all the situations, all the potencies, anything that can happen, that's already in the universal form. Then there is the manifestation of it in Brahma's creation. Right? So the reason everything's working is because of the universal form. It's not that Indra is doing it, it's Krishna's potency that allows Indra to do what he's doing. Right? So Indra himself is just a particular manifestation of the Mahabhutas. That's all. Right? So and it's also they also will only do certain things. Earth will only do certain things. Right? It means, you know, the hole in your nose, that's not earth, that's ether. Right? Space. And it'll be filled with air, you know, unless you got a cold. Right? You know. So does that make sense? But that there is space for that mucus, that's still ether. Right? So if the ether element's not there, then there can't be anything in that space. You know what I'm saying? But because now it's filled with mucus, then air is not there. But still, space is the common principle. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the manifestation is just made out of these elements, and so it's put together in these ways. But then you can cut down the tree and let it sit there, and it'll rot and then turn into earth, right? And pretty soon it becomes some grass, or, you know, cows eat the grass, it becomes a cow. It's always changing. Right? So that's the thing. That's the Adibhuta. What you can see, that's the Adibhuta. It's always changing. But the Adidaiva, that's not changing. That's already fixed. There's unlimited forms, and it's just a matter of which one is being manifest in the Adibhuta. Right? According to the desire of the Adiatma. Right? According to the Adiatma's work as karma. So his karma then through the agencies of the Adidaiva changes the Adibhuta, that therefore it manifests in the good way or bad way according to good work or bad work. Does that make sense?
So could you say that the Adidaiva is the primary creation and the Adibhuta is the secondary creation?
Yes, basically. Like that. But they're going on simultaneously. It's not when the secondary creation happens, the primary creation is not there. No, the secondary is only manifesting the primary creation according to the karma of the living entities. Right? But otherwise, that's why it's all there. That's why it works, is because of the Adidaiva. Right? So if you see like that, then you're not in illusion. That's why Krishna is pointing this out. Now, all this together is there. So you have the soul who is Adiatma, but because of his conditioning, he's performing karma. Therefore, the Adidaiva is awarding him his karma in the form of the Adibhuta. Right? And so, but in all this, then someone will think it's the demigods that are worshipped. Right? Because in karma, you're worshipping the demigods. But they're just part of the universal form. So who's the actual Adiyagya? Right? Who's actually making this? So that's then. Who is the Adiyagya and where in the body does he live? Sri Krishna, who is represented by the Supersoul in the heart of every living being, is Adiyagya. This has been confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 5.29, wherein it is said, a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities. Okay. So then, the ultimate, so one's performing all these activities, but the ultimate, that's Krishna. So if that's understood, that he's the one to be worshipped, then everything works very nicely. Right? So that's the point, is everything that's going on, all knowledge, all activities, everything is to be connected to the Lord, because he's the Adiyagya. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.30, by knowing Krishna's Adibhuta, Adidaiva, and Adiyagya, one can understand and know him, even at the time of death. Right? So he is this manifestation, that potency. He is the demigods. He is the universal form. He is the Lord of the sacrifice. So whatever you see, that's Krishna. Right? That makes sense? So that's the point. Since Arjuna is facing a great battle, anything related to knowing the Lord at the time of death is of vital importance to him.
very relevant, you could say, yes. Therefore, after asking about the terms mentioned in verse 30, he poised an additional specific question. How can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? The answer to this question becomes the main theme in this chapter. Okay, so now verses 5 to 8. So Krishna is continuing. And whoever at the end of this life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Notice he says, so it doesn't say just remembering me, but it says remembering me alone. Because you could be thinking of Krishna and about, you know, your kids. Like that. Yes. The point is, you can think of Krishna or there. But you have to understand this option is only there for the women. It's not there for the men. You know. So, the point is that means anyone thinking of Guru, then that's as good as thinking of Krishna. So that will take you to that place, because where is the Guru? The Guru is situated with Krishna, so then you'll go to where Krishna is. Now, if the husband is a great devotee or stuff like that, then either from remembering him and then thinking of that devotional side they get there, or if he's a great devotee, if you're thinking of that devotee, so that's the element. So one will be elevated. You know, especially if he's gone back to Godhead, then by thinking of him, even just as the husband, still he's gone back to Godhead, so one will go there. Right? But it doesn't work the other way, because the point is for the man, thinking of it as a wife, it's not so much as a great devotee, it's that attachment to the wifeness. You understand? So therefore, it works on a different principle. Krishna, Guru, means if the husband's advanced, it's fine. As long as the point is that one is thinking of you know, Krishna, what's connected to him. You know. But what is meaning is not thinking of something else, just like this one devotee, he was there. He had had a car accident. And then afterwards, he was looking at the whole scene. He could see himself in the car and see the car and the accident, what happened, and, you know, and all that. And he's thinking, oh, okay, you know, and then he's starting to move away from the car and go up like that. And then seeing, oh, wow, it looks like, you know, I guess I'm dead, going back to Godhead and all that. So everything's going very, very, you know, like that and very peaceful and everything. And then he thought, wow, who's going to take care of my kids? Bang, he was right back in the body, woke up, and all the pain and everything like this. But Krishna says, thinking of him alone means not him and everything else. You know, like that. Those are the indirect things that you've connected to Krishna, but here this means directly connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So the indirect is not an option to think of at the time of death. Unless you want to deal more with that indirect, then hey, it works. So whoever at the end of this life quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. It means attains his nature. So in other words, him alone means him and his nature. Right? Does that make sense? It's like that. So it means whatever is connected with his nature. It's directly. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. Therefore, Arjuna, should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me, and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. He who meditates on me is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. Right, so now we've brought up these activities. So you see, now Krishna is very nicely combining these all into one thing. Before they were separated very nicely. The activity itself, the knowledge itself, you know, the remembering him itself. So, but now it's all being brought together. Because like in Astanga Yoga, when you're in Samadhi, or Dhyana in Samadhi, then there's no activity. There's only that meditation.
right? You know, and then with karma, you're thinking about the activity itself, how to do it properly according to the time, place, and circumstance. You know, and then the result is for Krishna. Right? The knowledge is you're seeing how the operation of everything's happening. How does the material nature function? Right? What is my relationship with it and the Lord? So you're seeing all these connections. Right? So the focus is not on the activities. Here it's just pleasantly blended. That all your activities, all your thoughts, your intelligence, your mind, whatever's of value to you, do all that and think of Him. So now we see it's now the complete aspect is being given. 5:8. Remembering Krishna at the time of death. Verse 5 answers the last question of Arjuna. How can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? A devotee can know Krishna at the time of death by remembering Him, because remembering is devotional service. Anyone who quits his body remembering Sri Krishna is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord, without a doubt. This is the importance of Krishna consciousness. Unless one has practiced devotional service during his life, he will not be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. Therefore, one should constantly practice remembrance of the Lord by chanting the holy name. As Lord Chaitanya has advised, this level of constant chanting can be achieved only when one is very tolerant and humble. In Renunciation Through Wisdom, Srila Prabhupada explains how the devotee should prepare for death. The activities of the day evoke dreams at night and induce emotions appropriate to those activities. Similarly, the activities performed in one's lifetime flash across one's mind at the moment of death and determine one's next life. Therefore, if one's present activities are directed towards chanting, hearing, and remembering the Supreme Lord's transcendental name, along with descriptions of His beauty, qualities, pastimes, associates, and paraphernalia, then one's consciousness at the moment one leaves his body will automatically be attracted to the Lord. Therefore, devotees always remember Him in all their activities, in their endeavors for food and safety, and even in the middle of the battlefield while fighting a war. Life being like a battlefield in which one may die at any time, the devotees remember Him at every moment, and He willingly becomes the charioteer of their chariot-like bodies. The activities of their bodies, minds, and words are thus prompted by the Supreme Lord's will. And at the end, when they leave their gross and subtle bodies, they go directly to the spiritual world. Right, so what you do is what you think of at night. So the same way as what you do in your lifetime is what you're going to think at the time of death, right? Because these are the ultimate means day, night, life, death, right? So they go together. So that's the thing. If one's absorbed in Krishna, one's seeing all his activity in Krishna, Krishna is what's important, then at the time of death, then one will see Krishna. Right? And if not, then whatever it is you think about, then Krishna says you'll attain that without fail. Right? So that's far better to remember Krishna.
We get a realization when we are in a dangerous situation, usually saves Krishna. It comes.
Yes, but that's because you're practicing, so therefore the mind goes to what's the most important. In other words, the mind's going to go where it finds shelter. So if you find shelter in things other than Krishna, the mind will go there. Right? Because death is, it creates insecurity, right? Because you're leaving a situation that is known for a situation that you don't know. Right? Or just maybe you know, but you're comfortable in the situation you're in. So therefore, leaving the body is always going to be a disturbance. Right? So if Krishna is your only shelter, then leaving the body, then you'll take shelter of Krishna, so you're going to remember. But if there's something else, that's why Krishna says, even though you're taking shelter of Krishna, but if there's something else you're taking shelter of, then there's a good chance you'll remember both. So what's the situation in which you could be engaged in those activities that are dear to you on the material platform and have Krishna? You're born in a devotee family. You understand? So that has both. So that's this point. Is therefore, once you think of Krishna alone, then he says one goes directly to the spiritual sky. Otherwise, one will be nicely situated, you know, in a devotee family where the atmosphere is basically spiritual, you know, depending upon your degree of spiritual. You know, how much was Krishna and how much was the material, then that's going to determine also the family. Right? So, but the same point is that why come back again? You know what I'm saying? If you want to say, no, but, you know, we can preach, then come back as an acharya. Go to the spiritual world. Perfect yourself. Then come back as an acharya. You do a lot more than you stayed here because you were attached. You know? Does that make sense? So you want to be kind and compassionate. First, get to, you know, that platform first. Then come back all you like. You know? Does that make sense? You know, in other words, you're coming back out of your free will or out of Krishna's pleasure, as opposed to that you're forced because you were thinking of many things instead of just Krishna. Right? Okay. In verse 5, the Lord explains the specific situation of a devotee remembering him at the time of death. In verse 6, the general rule is presented. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Srila Prabhupada writes in Renunciation Through Wisdom. There's a lot of stuff in this Renunciation Through Wisdom. Like that. At the time of death, our state of consciousness determines our next birth. Death destroys the body made up of the five gross elements. But the subtle body, consisting of mind, intelligence, and false ego, remains. As the air carries the scent of the place it blows over, so the soul carries a person's subtle body of mind, intelligence, false ego, along with his state of consciousness, onto his next birth. And his body is determined accordingly. When a breeze blows over a garden, it carries the fragrance of flowers with it. But when it blows over a rubbish heap, the breeze is filled with the stench. Similarly, the activities a person performs during his lifetime continuously influence his mentality. And at the time of death, the cumulative effect of those activities determines his state of consciousness. Pretty straightforward. Yes?
Reading this, it sounds like actually this cumulative effect of all activities actually kind of predetermines the state of consciousness in the moment of death, and in a sense, we kind of, even if we make some endeavor, it will fail or be successful according to our activities during.
But still, it's our activities. We've made the choice. It means where we will feel uncomfortable. Could you all hear?
No.
Okay. He's saying is that it would appear here is that. By your consciousness, you know, by your activities in your life, then it will predetermine your consciousness. So it's kind of like predetermined where you're going to go. You know, you don't have that choice. But the key is still you've performed the activity. So therefore you'll get the result of, you know, taking shelter of that activity. You perform the activity and, you know, there's something about it you like, so you take shelter there. You find your solace there, your identity there, your results or your happiness or distress there. So if you do that enough, because he says cumulative effect. So if you do something more prominently, that's what's going to be there. So if predominance is Krishna consciousness, it's not going to be wiped out by some small aspect. You know, just like it said, what was that this morning? I can't remember the example. Example is given of a person who's always nicely situated, but he gets angry. But that anger is not going to throw off his nature. It's not going to change his nature. Oh, okay. The mind of the good man undergoes no change. Though it may be roasted, roused by anger, the water of the ocean cannot be heated by a straw fire. You know, so in other words, it means the person is there, but it's not going to change his nature. You know, it's that we take it, it means you have to see what is the predominance, what is the substance. And then accordingly, then that will determine the nature. So it's a cumulative effect. But this idea is that one may have done a whole lifetime of good and then he does one bad thing and then that's it. Then that's a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Now, one may say, based on this, is that, well, what about, you know, Moses? He had a whole lifetime of good activity. Right? And, but then for one activity, he didn't get to go into the promised land. But the point is that's an accumulative effect. He's thinking, by my action, I have gotten results. Right? Means, you know, I perform my duties well, therefore I became a favorite of the Pharaoh. You know, I changed my mentality, I became, more determined to follow the path of my forefathers or whatever it is, and so that changed his situation. Then he, you know, took up the rebellion against the Pharaoh and he got his results. You know, then he led, you know, he went to the Red Sea, you know, and because of, you know, that particular faith, he's doing this, it parted. Right? So then he's going, and then when, you know, he hits the rock with his staff, it gives water. So he's looking at it, I perform an activity, you know, an observable activity, I get the observable result. Then the Lord says, okay, now chant my name and get water from the stone. But he won't. He picks up the staff and hits the stone with his staff. So that means he doesn't have faith in the holy name. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a cumulative effect. But at the same time, is because his whole lifetime was then geared towards trying being God conscious. Therefore, he's still revered from that position. This one weakness is not going to remove all the good. But at the same time, it does have an effect. Yes. 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 Because the point is one is committed oneself to the Lord, therefore the Lord will help. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but the point is what we're saying is you've made that commitment. It's not that you're not trying, you're not making any endeavor, then Lord Chaitanya, what will he do? But you're really trying and you're really trying to do, so then the Lord will help. But it's the result of your endeavor. It's that cumulative effect. But at the same time, as you always have that independence that you could think of the Lord anyway. But the tendency is you're not going to. You're going to think of the Lord according to the impressions. Does that make sense? But the impressions are generated by your own activities, your own your own free will. Does that make sense? So it's still not predestined. It's just that generally that's what's going to happen. So unless one changes, because you can become in a moment God conscious. So that's not going to. It's still that free will is there. But generally speaking, one will go by the way of one's. Right? Otherwise, why is this place full of living entities? Yes.
I have a question about how the last verse of the Ishvakashat relates to this mentality of thinking of Krishna at the time of death. Now, please remember everything I've done for you.
Because please remember what you've done. So you're going by the devotional activities that you've performed. But if you haven't done any activities for the Lord, how will you say, please remember what I've done for you? Right? It would be a little hard to say that. You say, please remember what I've done for you. We haven't done bhuktas, you know. So then, you know, then naturally, then it'll come out differently. Is that okay? Yes.
In this example that you mentioned about Moses, mm-hmm. can we say that he was more in karma than in God?
There, yeah, you could say is that he's working in that element of the karma yoga, but the problem is that he has that faith in the karma as opposed to specifically just in God. It means God's told him to do things, but because it's within the realm of karma, it makes sense to him. But when he's gone beyond that, then you know, that wasn't there. It's not brought out much. Though that is the teaching of the scripture, but at the same time as it's not as prominent. So it's always been do good work, you know, and all that, and because God says so, therefore, that's the connection. So you're doing good work simply because God said, but the work itself, you know, stands on its own. It's what it gains. It's a value of its own. You know what I'm saying? Because you've done all this good work, and then what are you going to get from this good work? Then you're going to get Canaan, right? You're going to get the milk of land. Milk of land and honey? No, the land of milk and honey, right? Or it could be the honey of milk and land, or whatever it is, yeah. Like that. So, but it's a reward for what you've done, as opposed to then your relationship with the Lord will be developed. You know, it's not like, hey, you know, you go back to Godhead. You know, it's not kind of like, hey, remember that garden you guys used to hang out in, but you haven't been there for quite a few thousand years? Hey, you know? You know, so, that's not brought out. It's like, I've done my work, I get my result. So it's very much rooted in karma, but dependent upon the Lord. But the karma takes prominence. That's the weakness in it. The devotion is not prominent enough. You know what I'm saying?
So this is why he couldn't get to the Holy Land, actually? Because he had not enough faith to get in there?
He didn't have enough faith in the Holy Name. Means everybody else went in. Actually, they have less than him. But the point is that one has to have faith in the Holy Name. Because otherwise, what do they tell you? You learn from this. They don't. They just finesse it. Because he's left in an exalted position. Right? But he's just left sitting there on a rock while everybody else goes in and he sits outside, you know? And then you don't hear any more about it. You know? But then the thing is you could also take it as they all went in, and so now they're all absorbed in the fruits of their results, and now he's alone, so now he can meditate on God and be absorbed in that way. But you don't hear any more about it. You know, that's just kind of the end. You know what I'm saying? So there is that element. So there's so many things to learn, but you're dealing with people who, if it's not obvious, they can't believe in it. You know, because constantly it's coming up, that lack of faith. Does that make sense? Does it make sense to anybody else? Okay. Hearing Krishna's instructions in verse 5 and 6, one might conclude that sense remembrance of the Lord is the most important thing. Everyone should constantly abandon his duties and dedicate his time in hearing and chanting. To correct such hasty conclusions, in verse 7, Krishna says that Arjuna should always think of him and at the same time carry on his prescribed duty of fighting. See how clever Krishna is? With his activities dedicated to Krishna and his mind and intelligence fixed on him, he will attain the Lord without a doubt. So his activities, you know, so that's the body, the mind, and the intelligence. That's the words. Right? So body, mind, and words. It's fixed on Krishna. Then one will attain Krishna, yes.
So then, why and at what point does one stop the activities and just continue with remembering?
Never. Or death, that the activities do stop at that point.
I mean, just taking up, for example,
go ahead. Just think about everything that goes with that. Where would you sit? Do you have to eat? You got to go to the toilet. Does that mean, do you wash? Do you wear clothes? You just walk around with nothing on, you know? And if you're walking around with nothing on, you're not going to do it around here. You know, you're going to do that in the forest. So do you have to watch out for the tigers, lions, and bears, and all that kind of stuff? You know what I'm saying? So where is the just chanting and absorption? Yoga, that's all they're doing. But that's Satyayuga, you know. You know, the minimum we hear of somebody becoming perfect through that process is 10,000 years. Well, actually, no. Dhruva Maharaj, 6 months. 6 months. That's the quickest we hear, heard of. But that's the only example. Everybody else, the Prajapatis and all that, who are technically senior to him, they're 10,000 years, 60,000 years. You know what I'm saying? Hiranyakashipu, he didn't do bad like that. Does that make sense? So that means duties will still be performed. The point is one will try to give those up, but one will create something. Like I remember I was in Hrishikesh. And I saw one, you know, Baba there. And he was, after going to the toilet, he cleaned himself. Now this is not the taking bath, this is before the bath part. It took him 45 minutes. Right? He did every exact Hari Bhakti Vilas. 45 minutes. You can do it in 2 minutes, 3 minutes. But it was 45 minutes, you know, exactly each finger washing, you know, all the different things and going through and each one. And it's just so the thing is what does he have to do in a day? He's a Babaji. So all he has to do is chant, like Haridas Thakur. Do we ever hear of Haridas Thakur? He was so careful in his Saucha Kriya that, you know, it would take him 45 minutes to cleanse himself before he took a bath. No, it doesn't say that. So this is the point, is you'll make up things, you'll create things, you'll expand on things to fill up your day. So it'll happen anyway. So that's Krishna's point to Arjuna. You'll go to the forest and you say, because I won't fight, but you'll end up fighting anyway because it's your nature. So you're going to act according to your nature until you're transcendental. But if you're already transcendental, you don't have to follow a process. You just have to, you know, perform your devotional activities. Right, so then it doesn't matter. But if you're on the level of trying to get to perfection, then the point is you either follow religion or you will create your own. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is just chanting the holy name, that's transcendental. That's the transcendental swadharma. But we're in under conditioning. Conditioning falls under four varnas, four ashrams. Does that make sense? So that's why it's, one can say the one, but it doesn't work like that. You know, it's like you can't have your cake and eat it. You get one or the other. You know, but we somehow or another think we'll get both. You know, I'll live very simply, but it won't be austere. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'll be in a very prestigious position, but I won't actually have any responsibility or have any difficulties that I have to, you know, manage. You know what I'm saying? My sense, you know, we'll get married, family life, everything will just be nice and happy and everything like that. And, you know, something like that Kodak moment, you know, like that. And so, but you notice they say Kodak moment. They don't say Kodak, you know, movie or picture, right? You know, stuff like that. Even a movie only get 2 hours, you know, unless it's a, one of these, what's that guy? The 6 hour ones, you know, like that. So is that Sasorche? Well, how do you say that weird name? Huh? Yeah, Scorsese. You know, he'll do these 6 hour ones sometimes. You know, so, like that still is 6 hours, you know. Then what about the other, you know, how do you say, 18 hours? And that's today, you know. You know, so like that, you know, it's a. Yes.
It appears for the mind, it's very difficult to do one thing, and because it needs concentration and to think of another thing, otherwise we don't get the right result. So Krishna here.
The point is that you're working at different stages here. So that's why all these processes have been defined. They're all part of one process, but you still have to know each one separately. You know, it's just like you're cooking. It's one process, but still you may be shown how to cut a vegetable or how to wash a pot properly, you know, or how to make a chance or how to stir or all these different things that they themselves aren't cooking, but they're all part of the overall process, you know. So these earlier chapters to define that. So you're doing an activity. If there's an activity you have to focus on so much, the point is then you're dealing with the element of the karma, right? Because it's getting a result, but it's karma yoga. So who's the result for? For Krishna. So you want to get the best result for Krishna. So you're focusing the activity to get the result, right? But that's for Krishna. So it's maybe for you and you'll give it to Krishna, so it's a lower level. Or it's already for Krishna, therefore you're focusing so much. Right? Because if it's for you, sometimes you may think of the results and what you're going to get, and that inspires you. But those moments, then you're not focused. But if it's always for Krishna, then it's not a problem. Because the point is, Krishna is the moment. But for it to be yours, it has to be the future. Right? And then that happiness that'll come from that. So that means you're not as focused on the present as someone who the result is for Krishna. Because if you think of it's for Krishna, but Krishna's in the present. So you never leave the present. So you'll actually do the activity better than somebody who's doing it for themselves. Right? Because the result comes from your focus in the present. Right? Then at the same time as you do have the act, like, can you ride a bicycle? Yeah. So do you only think about, you know, hands and pedals and all this and that? Or you may think about so many things.
Yeah.
But that's an activity and you're thinking of something else. What's the difference between this and what example you gave?
It doesn't require this concentration.
But why not? But when you first were shown a bicycle, did it require concentration?
Yes.
Yeah, and did you have it?
Yes.
And so you never bumped into a tree or fell over?
I fell a few times.
Yeah, so that means there was moments of lack of concentration. But whatever it is, as you developed the concentration, then you didn't. But then with time, then you could do that. So what is the difference then?
Because I'm used to the activity.
And that is gained through?
Practice.
So that's the point is that the karma yoga is practice. That's why sadhana bhakti is practice. But as it becomes easy, the point is then if you're not thinking of Krishna, then what will you think of? Just like here, the new devotee. They've come to the temple and this and that. They see so many things. They're so absorbed in this and that. Now come back after 3 or 4 years. Now what is he thinking about? Yes, but he's already be able to do what he's able to do. Now the point is what he's thinking about, that will determine how he moves forward in Krishna consciousness, or not. You know, so now does he get involved in temple politics, or, you know, community things, or this or that, or now he's just, you know, absorbed in Krishna while he does all the services that he practiced over the last 3 or 4 years. You understand? So that's the point, is that if it's connected to Krishna, then as you're freed up from here, you can think more of Krishna. Right? Now what's the next natural step of thinking of Krishna? You just go, it means if you can just be absorbed in Krishna and his pastime, name form, you know, pastimes, you know, associates, that's good. But if not, then you have the interim state of the gyan. Because detachment and knowledge come from performing karma. Right? So from the karma yoga is naturally going to come gyana yoga. Then you're going to start to see its workings, the modes of nature, you know, all the different elements of the philosophy. And so, you know, am I doing this just for Krishna? Where are the attachments lie? Where are the things? So the Anartha Navrita, you're able to look at it very carefully. So then the mind will start to get filled with these things. You know. But you're still doing that to please Krishna. Right? So the same way as the karma, once you're expert at the activity, if you think of Krishna, you keep going. If you don't think of Krishna, you get distracted by the karma. Same way with the gyan. As it's new, so therefore trying to see Krishna in everything and all that, then it will be a very absorbing the technique. But once that becomes easy, now are you going to continue thinking of Krishna, or are you going to get distracted by the gyan? Right? So if you continue to think about Krishna, then the next thing is just thinking about Krishna. So you're performing the activities, you have the proper knowledge, but the focus is all on Krishna. Remember, does that make sense? Yeah, so it's a natural progress. That's why it's given in this progression. But we can see Krishna's pointing out now, because it was start, means we started in the first and second chapters, and third chapters, that Arjuna is on the battlefield. He has something he wants to gain or not lose. So you're dealing on the level of this sakam karma. And then he's trying to take that and make it into karma yoga. Bring the karma yoga into the nishkam. Right? Then having the proper knowledge with which you're performing that nishkam karma yoga. Then that becomes your proper in the fifth chapter. Right? Then now you're adding to that this dhyana, focusing on Krishna. Because that's the element. Okay, you have the proper knowledge and proper activity, but why? Because you want to think of Krishna. But now he's pointing out here is that that whole process is very important. And all these technical elements are very important, but still the most important is that remembrance of him. That's what's going to give the ultimate result. So you have to be able to balance it all. So now instead of focusing just on these, now it's a balance between these. So where it's activity, then the focus is there. Where it's knowledge, the focus is there. Where it's remembrance, the focus is there. Right? But the ultimate thing is to be able to always be remembering Krishna no matter what you're doing. Is that what it says? Yeah. So it's just practice. That's why sadhana bhakti is there. One has, you know, one practices and then these things come. But, so the more one understands, the more, conscious you are of the practice. So that's why you start with the activity, but from the activity, knowledge and renunciation will come. Using that, reinvesting that knowledge and renunciation back into the activity, the quality of the activity is higher. Therefore, it generates greater knowledge and detachment. Right? And so when that's strong enough, then one is not so absorbed in the material energy. Now one can more think of Krishna. Right? Because one's thinking of Krishna, but it's less. But now one can think of Krishna more. Right? So when one can always think of Krishna, but then how are you going to express that affection? Right? That's why the yogi, though he meditates and he sees the super soul, at some point he has to make a decision what he's going to do. You know, there's him, the super soul, now what? Right? So therefore he either merges or takes up devotional service. So the devotee takes up devotional service from the beginning. Right, rather than going through this whole thing and then only starting, he starts from the beginning. So therefore all his activities are connected, all his intelligence, all his, you know, mind and feelings are all connected to Krishna. Is that what it says? Okay.
Yeah. Maharaj, The process of Vaidhi Bhakti, then the relevance for us would be that we have like a fixed parameter and we can observe how the mind oscillates.
It means you have a fixed environment. And so in a fixed environment, then you don't have any anxieties to choose what to do. Right? You know, like, let's say you take the brahmachari. Does he have, you know, every day he comes and, you know, what time he would like to eat, then that's, you know, could happen then, you know, and so, and then when he comes and they give him a menu, he has to choose, you know, and all this. No, it's just at 9 o'clock he comes, sits down and eats, and at 9:15 he gets up and goes away. So it's very easy for him. So then, in this, then that regulation, then he starts to be able to see things. You can start to see your attachments. You see, you know, because people, otherwise, there were so many other things. You know, which restaurant to go to, you know, what do we order this time. So all these things are absorbing. But if none of that's there, then it's just you, you know, your bowl, your spoon, and your mind. You know, and so therefore, then you start to see, you know, your attachments, how you dealt, how did you deal with the server guy, how did you do, because in the restaurant, it's all about you and the service, so the guy does something you don't like, and you say something, you know, rough, like that, then, you know, no one's going to say anything. You know what I'm saying? But here you do, then why did you say? This is just a normal thing, you know, what's going on? Why was the, so you start to see what's happening. You know, so in that regulated environment, that's why you see more. Right? Does that make sense? That wasn't like a BART, so you see more. So it's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's a matter of therefore you're able to observe more happening. You understand? So that's why much of the time with those who are practicing nicely and things are going nicely, more is seen. But that's because it's observable, because the other things are steady. But where you don't have that and everybody's just doing their own thing, it's harder to see what actually is going on. So that's why the scriptures then define things on that level. That's why we have the Dharma, Artha, and Kama Shastras, because otherwise, how do you know what you're looking at? Because the devotional scriptures will define what's going on. You know, but then when it's more covered by these other aspects, how do you know, you know, if someone's trustworthy or not, or this or that? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Do you understand the example?
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone understand? Even though it may be difficult to remember Krishna while we perform our duties, here's your question. Right? It will be even more difficult to remember him at the time of death. Therefore, the Lord wants us to practice remembrance of him throughout our life. One who meditates on Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his mind constantly engaged in remembering him, undeviated from the path, is sure to reach the Supreme Lord. Verse 8. In this verse, the Lord emphasizes that constant remembrance leads to remembrance at death. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 6. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death. So this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life, one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. This constant remembrance of the Lord is the topmost yoga. So verses 9 to 13. Yoga Nistra Bhakti. One should meditate upon the Supreme Person as the one who knows everything, as he is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conception, who is inconceivable, and who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. 10. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in full devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Verse 11. Persons who are learned in the Vedas, who utter Omkara, and who are great sages in the renounced order, enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now briefly explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. 12. The yogic situation is that of detachment from sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air at the top of the head. One establishes himself in yoga. 13. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body. If one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. Okay. Verses 5 to 8 emphasize the importance of remembering Krishna. In verse 9, the Lord explains how he should be remembered. One should meditate on Krishna as the one who knows everything, the oldest, the controller, the smaller than the smallest, the maintainer of everything, beyond all material conceptions, inconceivable, luminous like the sun, transcendental, beyond the material nature, and who is always the Supreme Person. The important message of verse 9 is that Krishna is not impersonal or void. So he's the Supreme Person. But in here is all the other aspects, how he's entered into the world and how we can know him. Right? That is then what he's bringing out. In other words, like in the Bhagavatam, at all times, all places, and all circumstances, that one should know the Lord. Everything one should know. So all these things are there. As one who knows everything, because otherwise, who's the other person other than God who knows everything, right? Ourselves, right? So he knows more than us, right? He knows everything, so he knows all the things and all that. So there's not something he doesn't know. So that would also give us faith in the scriptures, because he who knows then has written the scriptures. Right? They've given us the scriptures. So that means then, you know, he knows what he's talking about. Right? The oldest, so he's there before anybody. So he has the most experience. He's seen everything. He's there before everything. Everything is expanding from him. right? The controller, right? So that here again we come up, you know, it's, you know, there's controller and then there's the supreme controller, right? Smaller than the smallest. So that means he's in everything. There's nothing that he's not in. So we may think, oh, this is such a minor activity, God's not involved. Like how I pull the tissue out of the box. But still, the point is that in that activity, Krishna's involved, right? You know, does that make sense? You know, why the tissue, right? You know, why not, you know, blow your nose on a blanket or something, you know, like this. So why the tissue? So it's Krishna is able to do certain activities in that form, right? The box is able to hold them. You know, then you have the way the tissue comes out of the box. So if you don't pull it correctly, then you rip the tissue or all of them will come out or, you know, like this. So there is still Krishna's involved. So that's the point. Down to that level, how you blow your nose once you get the tissue, how you'd hold the tissue to blow your nose. You can't just hold it anyway, right?
Just out of curiosity, you mentioned blow your nose for 10 times. I'm curious, how should I blow my nose?
How should you blow your nose? Remembering the Lord. Right? You know, like he says, you know, not too hard, not too soft. Not too hard. All the yogic principles have to be applied, right? You know, seated properly on a tissue. Right? All this, you know. Yeah, so. Like, these principles are universal, right? They're not just... Just, you know, it's a topical thing now. That's why I'm using it. But in the middle of summer, we don't talk about blowing the nose. We talk about the air conditioner or something else. But, yes?
There's something I don't understand. It may sound a little moralistic, but since everything is included in God, and God is in everything, so the jiva's mind cannot conceive anything that is not already in the Lord's mind. So how can all this perversion and evil in the world,
you can explain. The point is God is everything, but what does God prefer? How does God act? In evil? No, in good. Right? So, what activities he prefers, that's how you define good. And what activities he's not interested in, that's evil. You know what I'm saying? So, that defines what is to be done and what's not to be done. Does that make sense? So the point is that it's cold now, right? And so if we start a fire here in the middle of the room, then everybody will think it's very nice, unless, of course, you have me sitting there. But, you know what I'm saying? You know, or in the middle of summer, it's very hot. You know, so if we can create something, it'll create cool. So how do you know what's good? You understand? Because there's an opposite to compare it to, right? So the point is in the spiritual world, it's all about Krishna. So even though there's these differences, it's not a duality, because it's all about Krishna. In the material world, it's a duality, because the heat and the cold have nothing to do with the person, the source of them, right? Because he's the one unifying element. So therefore, in Krishna, there's no duality. But in all in here, there is. So you've chosen to do one thing or another within the duality based on your choice. But here it's a matter of your choosing what is here within the duality for Krishna's pleasure. So then you're going to choose those things that Krishna prefers. Does that make sense? That's why he says he's all these things, but he's still a person. The supreme person beyond all this. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, you'll have a house. There's so many, you know, here's, if you have your choice, you'll choose a particular house. You know, and then you'll have a particular way that you'll set it up. What kind of furniture, what kind of, you know, other accessories and decorations and all that. You'll have your choice in how you're going to live in that house. You know, what you do in what room. You know, at what time and all this. So all that you can say is connected to you, is you, but at the same time, you're a person beyond all that. You know what I'm saying? Just because they say, wow, this is a nice house, nice arrangement. So it's connected to you, but if that's all, and then you're standing going, yeah, no, it's great like that, but I ignore you and just, you know, look at all this, say, wow, check this out, this is so nice. Would you be happy? No, so that's the point, is that there's these things, that's why the rules and regulations have their limit. They're important in their connection to Krishna, but if you're so absorbed in them, you don't see Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You only see him as rules and regulations. You can't see beyond. That won't be that pleasing. Does that make sense? Is that okay? Okay, the maintainer of everything, that everything's going on because Krishna maintains it. We'll think because I'm maintaining it, my potency and that. You know, I'm in this situation because I want to be here. I have something to gain. And if I don't, I leave this situation. So you don't care anymore. You know, so, you know, otherwise how does the Buddhistic, you know, how you say, eternal, how you say, mental speculative question come up? You know, as if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear, does it make any sound? You know, like that. But what is that based on? It means if you're not there, then it's not heard. So that means its existence is not maintained outside of you because it's all illusion. So therefore you're an illusion, therefore it's there. So if you're not there, does it actually do anything? So you're actually the controller. Does that make sense? So no, Krishna is the maintainer. It makes sound whether you're there or not. Like, were you there when Krakatoa went off? No, but it made sound, even though you weren't there. Right? So, does that make sense?
Yeah, so that koan leads to the Buddhist practitioner to think he's going to control it, right? The koan is what you just said. This is this thing which makes your mind.
Yeah. It means these are useless. You know, it means it's just there to keep them busy. So it's because they have nothing to do, right? Because they're Buddhists, right? So definitely. So yeah. So this way, they keep themselves busy with nothingness. You know, what's the sound of one hand clapping? You know these kind of things they work on. You know, so. Keeps them engaged. Okay, beyond all material conceptions. So whatever you have of the material conceptions like this, then he's beyond that. Because otherwise then there's the thing. Because we're looking at good and bad according to what's here is the conception. Good and bad here is good and bad. So if that's a part of God, then that means God is good and bad. No, but the point is it only becomes good and bad whether it's in its connection or non-connection to God. So God's actually the basis of good and bad, not our good and bad, then we make God. Right? So that's the, you know, so it's like it's seen by the atheists and others that, you know, man will create God in his own image. And so they'll say, you know, so it's coming from you, so therefore he doesn't exist. So the principle that, you know, people are making, seeing God through their own vision, you know, that is a fault. That's correct. So the atheists are correct in pointing that out. But then their conclusion is that there's no God, then that's stupid. Right? No, the point is God's first, then there's man. So therefore, it's the other way around. Right? Does that make sense? But the problem is because we perceive him from our conditioned nature, therefore we misunderstand. Does that make sense? Yeah? Right? Luminous like the sun, so everything is, you know, everything is bright and nice because of him. That's him that makes everything, you know, wonderful, like that. And transcendental, beyond transcendental. So he's you know, he's not connected with the material nature. Beyond the material nature, that he functions beyond. It's not that he's just not in material nature, but he's beyond. And who is always the supreme person, right? So he's always a person. So these other aspects of God, that all these other ones before, that's him, that's his potencies as a person. But still, he's a person. You always have to make that distinction. Otherwise, we'll take a lower one, and then that's good enough. No, but you have to keep going till you get to the person, and then interact with the person. Like that. And that's the idea. So, end here for today.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaura Premanda.